A lot of exciting things. Now, I want to talk. No, this, again, this is Disaster Preparation Month 2024. And what were you trying to do? No, how did this start out? Started out right after 9/11, where I was getting with people who, and they were saying, look, you know, that's from the prepper movement. There's a lot of focus on that. And let me explain it to you. Between 3 and 5 million people in this country of ours, this fine country, consider themselves preppers. Now, that's probably a lot more. Did you ever go to the store and say, you know what? The beans are on sale. I'm going to buy some more beans. So we have them later on. Or the pasta's on sale. We're going to go out and buy some extra pasta, rice. Or, hey, we have, why am I concentrating on food? Doesn't have to be food. How about a fire extinguisher? Hey, I have a fire. I'm going to go out and I'm going to get a fire extinguisher. And we're going to go out and we're going to blah, 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 blah. All right. Oh, what do I got? New hat, and there's a label on the hat. Anyway, yes, it's Monday. But anyway, they, you know, any of these things. Like the fire extinguisher, first aid kit. Did you get first aid CPR training, AED training? We deliver that here. Anything like that, preparing for emergencies, you are a prepper. You're a doomsday prepper. Maybe you're not going overboard. Now, for a couple of years, we tried to do that with organizations, and we worked with a couple of organizations to try to do that. And then as 9/11 started to get further and further away, people, the attention went all the way down until 2010. And what I found was, again, you know, being the person who I am and everything, was that people, one, don't like to think about disasters, right? They don't like to think about what happened. I should have known that from work because I've been on a project already where they've had zero fire preparation things, and they were withholding information on conversations with a fire department. This is in the Midwest. And I said, well, why didn't you tell me that the fire department wasn't going to come to the job if I was going to call 911? Well, we had a fire because they never thought that they were going to have a fire and never thought it was going to be a big deal. Oh, okay, great. So you're not going to do prep. And then, you know, you find out as we go along, you know, okay, as you go further and further along with the, no, we get further away, 2010, they stopped funding a lot of the programs and that big budget deal of 2010. And one of the things they stopped doing was, they, meaning the federal government, was specifically with the PPE, with the filtering face fused respirators, a.k.a. N95 medical respirators. They're usually the green ones. Hey, we're not going to do that. In New Jersey and Pennsylvania, they were investing in vaccine plants, one over in Swiftwater, Pennsylvania, at the Sanofi Pasteur, Sanofi Aventis. It keeps changing names over the years. I haven't been in the neighborhood for a year. I don't really gamble at all. So, no reason for me to really go there, unless you want to go to a couple of great breakfast places, but they're breakfast places, right? Very unique places over there. But no real need to go there unless you're into skiing or you're into, there's a resort there. And the government, they $187 million in private funds were used to build a vaccine plant for flu, for a pandemic that never happened with the flu. Little did they know, 10 years later, we had COVID. Not the same technology necessarily for that. And they use mRNA vaccines. This was with eggs and flu and everything. I was the tour guide, among other things, there for VIPs. But going on and on, well, we had this focus, and then these things never materialized here. Zero. Nothing ever materialized. So everybody, their thoughts went away. And people didn't want to hear that the government is not prepared for emergencies. Didn't want to hear it. You should have 3 to 4 days of emergency supplies in your house. Food, whatever you're going to need. Nobody wanted to hear that. You should know, especially in 2008, we had a financial crisis in this country that may be happening again. No, a lot of doom and gloomers here. All of a sudden, that wasn't the focus anymore. Disaster. Oh, we had a disaster. We're going through this, and it's horrible. Everything that is going there, everything got away from that, from actual disaster. And then in 2012, in our neighborhood, we had Superstorm Sandy. That's, I mention it because it's my experience with a storm thing, with storms. I know down in Florida, down in Alabama, the Gulf Coast, Katrina, Hurricane Katrina, in New Orleans, and all of these other, you go through it routinely. It's almost like routine. Up here in Northeast, no preparation for it, very little. To the point, we all know what happened there, and we had land use approved from the 1930s even until today. They built communities down on the Jersey Shore that probably should have never been built. And we're still recovering from that. There's still a lot of recovery. You go down the Jersey Shore. I wasn't down there this year. Driving down Route 9. If you're familiar with the Bruce Springsteen song "Born to Run," Highway 9 is in there. I haven't gone down there, but last time I was there was last year, and they were still rebuilding from Superstorm Sandy in Bayonne, New Jersey, right down on 22nd Street. There are apartments there that have been condemned from Superstorm Sandy. So there's recovery is delayed up here. It's still in a lot of people's minds. But we got away from this. People don't want to hear that their government's not prepared. I'm here to tell you that the government is not prepared 100% with that. And I learned this dealing with the anthrax cleanups in 2001, October 2001. And again, very difficult to find anyone wanting to talk about that. I've tried again and again. Nobody wants to talk because they have NDAs, non-disclosure agreements going and everything. So recently I was appointed and then I was eventually elected to my church council. I'm an elder there. Yes, I know, elder. And I was an elder at my old church where we tried to do some of this stuff. There was very no disaster preparation and everything working with the local community. It fell upon deaf ears. So what we ended up doing was I shelved it. I had come out with Nuclear Terrorism, a Family Survival Guide, where I compiled a lot of the information I had with that. Biological, kind of hard. It was a very difficult subject, at least for me to write about, because of NDA agreements and everything else. And then we got a good quote unquote shot of that in 2020, starting September 2019, where there were reports out of China, of problems and everything. And then all of a sudden, all the PPE disappeared and everything else. So what we ended up doing was this. I ended up saying, look, why don't we do a disaster preparation little talk, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and that was yesterday. My wife limits me to 15 minutes when I talk in front of people. I can't imagine why that is. So I'm going to share that. I'm going to go to a brief commercial break here. I'm going to share with you the talk on disaster preparation that I gave yesterday with my church. So let's set that up, and I'm going to go to commercial break. OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy!
Hey there, safety professionals. Welcome to another episode of Safety Wars on Safety FM, hosted by Jim Pozel. And today we're diving into what it really means to be on the front lines of the safety war. So, let's start with the basics. Safety is not just a set of rules or regulations. It's a culture, a mindset, a way of life. When we talk about safety, we're not just protecting workers from harm. we're building an environment where everyone can thrive. It's about going home safe and sound to our families every single day. Now, I know it sounds like a heavy responsibility, but that's why we're here. To make sure everyone understands the importance of safety and knows how to implement it effectively. Whether you're a seasoned safety professional or just starting out, there's always something new to learn. Let's talk about some key strategies. First up, communication. It's critical to ensure that everyone on the team is on the same page. Regular safety meetings, clear signage, and open dialogue can prevent a lot of accidents before they even happen. Next, let's focus on training. Proper training equips your team with the knowledge and skills they need to stay safe. Remember, it's not just about ticking a box. It's about making sure every worker understands the why behind each safety protocol. This understanding fosters a culture of safety where everyone looks out for one another. Of course, we can't forget about technology. From wearable safety devices to advanced monitoring systems, technology is revolutionizing how we approach safety. Embrace it. Use these tools to enhance your safety programs and keep your team protected. But let's not get too comfortable. Safety is an ongoing battle. New risks and challenges emerge all the time. Stay vigilant, stay informed, and never stop striving for a safer workplace. So, what's the takeaway? Safety is everyone's responsibility. It's about creating a culture where safety is ingrained in everything we do. As safety professionals, it's our job to lead by example and inspire our teams to commit to a safer future. Thanks for tuning into Safety Wars on Safety FM. Stay safe out there, and remember, every day is a new opportunity to make a difference. Catch you on the next episode.
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars with your host, Jim Posel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
So here we have, we talked about, to remind everybody, this is a presentation I gave yesterday in my church. So what is the biblical basis for disaster preparation? Here we have two things. This is Genesis 41, 47 to 49. And this is the story of Joseph and the 7 years of famine, where he went and had to interpret the Pharaoh's dreams. And he advised the Egyptians to store up grain during 7 years of plenty to prepare for 7 years of famine. Right? Long-term planning for future hardships, right, on that. Then you have Proverbs 22:3. The prudent sees danger and hides himself, and the simple go on and suffer for it. So protect yourselves when you see a potential danger. And that's two of many Bible stories dealing with that. So question one, what is a disaster, right? And then we also talk about what is safe, always. What is a disaster? A disaster could be anything to you. It's personalized. It could, no, we also could be out there for everything. We understand personalized disaster. You lose a job. Your house burns down. You have a flood. You have an illness. You have any number of situations that may impact you personally. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And then we have regional. We mentioned them, storms. Could be winter storms. It could be weather events. It could be an earthquake. It could be war. It could be anything. It could be anything here. With disasters. Now, we went into this. And again, we're going to talk about what I ask this on every one of my presentations, every one of my trainings, everything. What is safe? What is safe? You have the traditional view. Safety is zero risk, zero accidents, zero emergencies. Zero illnesses, zero, 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 zero. You name it, it's zero. Then we have, and then I mentioned, hey, you don't think so? How many times do you see this going into a workplace? The truth of the matter is most people don't. These signs, I have two for the people on the radio, I have two signs. and both of them are zero accident signs. We have, we see this all the time, and this is like it's part of our psyche. Safe means zero, nothing happens. Then we get into the situation, well, if zero happens, then when something does happen, doesn't mean we're not safe. You got people with a lot of anxiety disorders out there that, you know, I'm not safe. I mean, this goes on now. I'm noticing it with a lot of children where something, back in during Gen X, something would happen. The parents would be like, there's nothing to be afraid of. Stop. And this caused a lot of psychological trauma because we didn't learn how to cope with things. But now we're going the opposite direction where everybody upsets everybody else. And as I tell people, if you're going to be freaked out, if you're going to not be able to cope with the stuff and learn coping strategies, you're going to be manipulated on a whole bunch of different levels. Yeah, you will. There's a book out there. You may remember this commentator. He's elderly now, so I haven't seen him in a lot of years. He's from Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Jerry Spence, How to Argue and Win Every Time. And it is a book on how lawyers manipulate people and how you make an argument. And it's about manipulating emotions. Now we have everybody out there manipulating emotions. And sometimes people pick up on it. They say, well, you're trying to scare me into doing something. Or, hey, when you get people out there saying, all is well, you know, all is well. There's no problem out there. And then you go and you tell them, look, we're not as safe as you think so. And no, and it's like, you know, you're not as safe as everyone thinks. Hold on. Is this plane? Anyway. Benny Hill music going. Oh, no, you're not. You're trying to scare us. Everything's well. Everything's good. We're prepared for everything. We're prepared for all eventualities, and so we're going to leave it to somebody else. And this is what the kind of stuff that we hear with this. And it's not true. We hear that all the time with workplace safety in the workplace. Oh, everything's well. Everything's good, right? And everything. I'm going a little bit more. I'm going more than 20 minutes or 15 minutes here. So we have the modern definition. What are we talking about? Safety. Capacity and plus resilience equals safety. Right? So more capacity, more resilience, more safety. We put up guards. We put up procedures. We put up training. We do all the preparation. All the stuff goes into safety. So now you're less likely of failing with things. What's safe? Well, let's talk about disaster response. All right, capacity, what you're able to do. Okay, you have emergency supplies, you name it. Around here, up until fairly recently, we're talking 2 years ago, it was very common for people are living around nuclear plants to have potassium iodide distributed. Still is. Down in Salem County, as far as I know, they still do it around the Salem Nuclear Power Plant. Why? In case there is a leak, you take potassium iodide to help limit the damage to your thyroid. Because radioactive iodide, from what I recall, you have radioactive iodide that your body absorbs, and here you are overloading your body with potassium iodide, right, in the event of a nuclear accident. Therefore, it won't absorb the radioactive stuff, and, well, that along those lines. I know that's truncated here, but that's basically it. You have, what do you have? Do you have, now because of COVID, what we learned, we have to have hand sanitizer, we have to have gloves, we have to have some type of face covering. I'm only going to ever recommend NIOSH-rated stuff, by the way. Don't get me off on this. We're going to have suits. We're going to have now the vaccination. We're going to have any number of things, social distancing, and a lot of the stuff that proved useless. Some of it proved effective. But, you know, everything in there, you're putting controls in there. Capacity. With food, you have extra food, extra bottled water. You have maybe perhaps a water filtration system. Going on and on and on and on. What you're able to do. You maybe go through tabletop exercises and you determine what your capabilities are, and then you're able to develop resilience. The ability to react, to recover from adversity, challenges, or stress. Your coping mechanisms, backups. Okay, we don't have tap water. Now we have bottled water. We run out of bottled water. Now we're going to have this. We have water filtration systems, and we have the filter and make the thing, and then make the water well. And then, okay, we have a 24-foot pool in the backyard. We could decontaminate that. We could use that for maybe some wash water where it's not potable. We could use it to flush the toilets. We could use it to do whatever. Oh, well, we have a fireplace. Now we could have that. We could have fire. Oh, we have another house that we invested in, or a family member we could go with. We helped them with their wood pile. They're cutting wood all summer. Now, if we have a loss of power or whatever, they got that. I've built together partnerships with local farms. I've built partnerships in my community with my neighbors. We're pooling resources, neighbors that are like-minded, who you can trust. Everything else, we stick together. You went out and you got a chainsaw, a little one. You got a generator, because they found out during Superstorm Sandy, chainsaws, very, very important up here, as I'm sure the rest of the country knows that already. But up in the Northeast, we didn't need to necessarily know that. The community getting together and, you know, working, you know, getting training, all that stuff, resilience, capacity, you're safer. Safety is not. The absence of incidents is the presence of controls. We've heard that from the great Jay Allen and Todd Conklin and everybody else on this network. What's emergency preparedness? We add one more thing to that. You add capacity, you add resilience, and you learn new skills and apply them, right? Real simple. We're learning new skills. Maybe, you know, this is all about like the Boy Scouts, right, with be prepared, or the motto of the U.S. Coast Guard, Semper Paratus, right? Always prepared. Be prepared with everything. And that's what you do, learning new skills. Okay, I'm going to learn how to build a fire. I'm going to learn how to defend myself within the law. I'm going to learn how to you know, whatever you want to do, whatever, you know, different skills, whatever you want to do, knot tying even. So I'm going to have rope and I'm going to learn knot tie. I'm going to learn what kind of PPE I'm going to need for doing stuff around the house. Believe me, that's an important skill. So what do we want to do? This is what I always say. Assess what your needs are. Analyze, I got a mistake in the PowerPoint there, but okay. Assess what you need. Assess your needs. Assess what you are going to do about it, and act. So again, our four different scenarios that I use, maybe a fifth one I've had. And again, Jimmy Poulsel is the only one who's come up with this. 0 to 24 hours. That's normal stuff that we're not always, we're all gonna have to deal with. Medical emergencies, first aid cases, fires, fire alarms, short-term power outages, short-term situations, floods, anything like that, 0 to 24, right? Scenario number two, 24 to 96 hours. That tells us what the government tells us to be prepared for, up to 4 days. Wildfires, huge floods, longer-term power outages, extended weather-related emergencies, shelter in place, evacuation, that whole thing. Up to 96 hours. That's what we're told to be prepared for. You have scenario number three, 4 to 30 days, I put it in. And again, there's overlap here. and a lot of overlap. Things change, but let's try to break this down. So most people, I tell them, look, scenario one, scenario two. When you start to get into 4 to 30 days, now you start to have a situation. Don't think that we can have a supply disruption. Here in the Northeast, they're talking about a supply chain disruption starting October 1st because of a longshoreman union going on strike here and ports shutting down. Supply chain disruption. Keep tuned on that one. Again, that is a possible disaster. So we're going to have everybody run out and get milk. They're going to get bread. They're going to get eggs. And they're going to get pancake syrup. And they're going to get some cinnamon. And we'll be all prepared to make French toast. Right? With that. Again, we got caught up on one of our jobs with a supply disruption when a ship got stuck in the Suez Canal. And a lot of the equipment that we needed and stuff we needed for the project was stuck on the ship. Anyway, you know, stuff gets unexpected. Now you get into 30 days plus, it's a whole new situation that is essentially off the grid or primitive living. That's a huge commitment, storage of huge amounts of water, food, fuel, etc. So let's talk about, and it could be a mix, right? Pandemic lockdowns, some communities are going into now. They're worried about mosquito incidents they're worried about, and they had recommended lockdowns in some Massachusetts towns recently. Some would argue that these pandemic lockdowns haven't stopped. If you have a family member in an old age home or nursing home, assisted living, rehab, anything like that, guess what? Someone comes down with COVID, the whole place is under lockdown. So we talked about medical information here with this. So we're going to pull up our medical stuff that we put together. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's do this. Now you're going to see me here. Screen. I shared this earlier this month, but no, we're going to share it again. All right. If you could see this. Okay, make a smaller Jim. Okay, maybe you can see it a little bit better there. And I developed this when I was taking care of my parents, along with my brothers here. And the question is that, you know, this was a nice, handy little form and everything else. And I got some feedback on it yesterday, some very good feedback I'll share with you today. So here we have medicine list for who it is. I had it labeled dad or mom. They don't want to see that. You put the person down. Helena Polzel. Walter Polzel. That's what I put down on that eventually because we had an issue. And I'll share with you. The whole idea is to take this with you to the hospital if you need this. Why did I choose the medical stuff? The church, older people, they have to deal with this. Or younger people taking care of older parents. They have to deal with this. Stuff, right? So you put it on there. Then you have what the medicine is. Warning dose, warning what the medicines are. Then you have the dose and which doctor prescribed them. And then you have afternoon, midday. Now, I had this set up as a MS Word file so you could know bad things or not. Then you have special instructions. So one of the special instructions could be we're going to check blood pressure when we give blood pressure, when we're scheduled to give blood pressure medication. And then we, if the blood pressure is above a certain level, then you take the appropriate medication. If your blood sugar, if you're diabetic, is above or below a certain level, this is what you do. Special instructions with this. So let's say that you're on dialysis. With dialysis, in Jimmy's experience, there are certain medications that you're only allowed to take on days where you're not receiving treatment. All right? With that, and there are some medications that you have to give during the treatment. It all depends on your particular medical situation. I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on the internet or TV. All right? Or on Safety FM. All right? But whatever, special instructions. And then you have a list of medications and what they are for. Now, you may say, well, isn't this a repeat of the above? No, it is not a repeat of the above. When they, meaning medical professionals, are entering data into the system, they go by lists of medications, what are they for, what's the dose and time per day, right? Meaning 5 milligrams, 4 times a day. And who the doctor is who prescribed it. That's how it gets entered into their database. So you make it very, very simple for the medical providers for that. And then the doctors and contact information, what kind of doctor? And their phone and address on there. Now hospital information. What hospital are they supposed to go to? Are they supposed to go to hospital A or hospital B? So, for example, with my father, he had a medical situation the Tuesday, I believe, before he died. He died on a Friday, and this was Saturday. He had a medical situation, and he went in for a procedure on Tuesday and Wednesday. He got to the hospital. He had some complications. We brought him. No, and now I said, look, I got to call 911. They said, I said to the hospital, I just got off the phone with his doctor. His doctor said to bring him in now. This is what his medical situation is. They said, well, we have to go and check it out for ourselves. I said, okay, the doctor said to bring him now. Okay, I said, okay, I'm going to be back here in 2 minutes. If you don't get the ball rolling, I will be calling 911 myself. The ball is in your court. You figure it out. I had the nurse supervisor there, who was a nice lady, I'm sure, but she was going through their protocols. And our doctor on staff has got to be blah, 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 blah. Turned out they don't have a doctor on staff. This is like the Saul Alinsky's rules for radicals. No, they don't have a de-escalation. We have to have our doctor. I said, your doctor is not this kind of doctor. You just told me to bring him in immediately. I waited 2 minutes. I went down and I said, I am calling 911. You did not do your job. He was told to go to call 911 now. I called 911. Guess what? And the people came. All right? The people came. And by the time the ambulance came, now their doctor was in there, quote unquote. Well, what's the problem? What's this? What's that? The EMT comes in, and they are all talking. And I said, you are going to stop talking, and I will do the talking. Everybody be quiet. So, okay, I have this out, and I say, okay, this is what the situation is. This is his medicine list. I handed it to the EMT. Number one, all spelled out for you. Number two, he is going to this hospital, not the hospital you're going to take him to. I already spoke to the doctor. This is the problem, number one. This is the problem number two. This is the problem number three. This is the problem number four. Number five, the doctor turned around. He was on his way home to the Jersey Shore. He turned around. He will meet us at the hospital. Period. End of discussion. Now, do you have any questions? You know what the EMT says to me? Mr. Posel, you are... I wish everybody was like you. All right, guys, load them up. And that was how it went. My father was so happy that I took charge. And he said, do you act that way at work? I said, when I have to. So he'd go out, I would take him out. And the ambulance guy says, what exactly do you do for a living? I said, I do this and I do this. Okay, keep doing it. We need more people like you. Gave me a pat on the back, an attaboy. But anyway, my wife says I shouldn't share anecdotes like that, but oh well. I do anyway. That's what happened. Because why? That's why you have to have the hospital information on there. Because not every hospital is equipped for the same thing. There are different types of hospitals. Case in point, I was on a project in California. Someone got hurt, very serious injury. I said, thank God the ambulance and the hospital is across the street, and the ambulance squad is right next to the hospital. They came, they said, I said, okay, you're going across the street? They said, no, sir, we are not. We're going to the hospital on the other side of town where they treat injuries like this. I said, oh, okay, I learned something today. Your insurance company, a number, a policy number, right? Now you're going to say, okay, Jim, that's obvious. No, it's not obvious. Have a problem with the insurance company, right? And I want to add this. I'm going to add one other thing. Patient's date of birth, right? And we're going to put up your medicine list as of, and then the date, right? And then down here, you have patient name and health issues, and I would put date of birth. Patient name, date, because that's how they end address. Okay, that's what they're going to use to verify who this person is. So your patient name, obviously. Date of birth. Now, if you are from Eastern Europe, all right, there you could have multiple dates of birth. Believe me, I worked with a Eastern European company for many, many, many years managing their safety. There, the dates and the names and everything else get all fouled up. Because this is what happens. You have your actual date of birth. You can have then the date that your birth is registered. And then you can have, and this is all especially with the around World War II and pre-World War II. So you can have the date you were born, the date your birth was registered, and the date you were baptized. All three are legitimate legal dates back in the day. So you need to know what the hell, and then there's what the hell the date is. I don't know. Pardon me, on all the paperwork. And also the date could be, right, could be on your immigration papers. That could be a fourth date. So when the former president, Obama, had issues with his birth certificate, Jimmy said, not really a big issue. A lot of the people, the heads of the movement who started this said, probably not an issue, needs to be investigated a little bit. I said, I get it. It could be millions of different birth dates. Now you can say, Jimmy, why am I emphasizing this? I'm emphasizing this because if they do not have the right date of birth, the insurance company, and that's different than what the insurance company has, they don't pay bills and it takes you 2 years to straighten out. Believe me, it happens. All right? Because my mother was in a situation like that. Everything got resolved eventually, but look at my hair. Look at my hair. You know? No, I'm only joking. My brother handled that. But, you know, it takes months, if not years, to straighten out the hospital bills. And they don't want to hear anything. Right? Eventually, everything gets straightened out. Healthcare advocate and contact info. Who is that person or persons? Who's the primary? Who's the alternate? What's the pharmacy information for that? Where are you sending the pharmacy paperwork? Where with that? Some other stuff that has to go in here. The living will. Any do not resuscitate order. Usually associated with the living will, but it depends on what state and what country you're in. It's set up differently and along the lines of a healthcare proxy. depending on how it's set up, depending on your state, your country, and everything. Those are the three things in there. And the power of attorney. People say, well, the power of attorney is all that stuff. No, it is not. In New Jersey and New York, two different documents. You have the power of attorney and the health care proxy, which indicates the living will and the do not resuscitate. Some states, my understanding, not an attorney. Check with an attorney. All four documents are separate. It all depends on where you live. All right? That's, you know, sometimes they combine them all. I don't know. When I've had to deal with it, it's been a health care proxy, power of attorney, living will with that. And the health care proxy is included in the living will, which says do not resuscitate. Who knows? Do I have to mention Terry Schiavo case from one that will go back in the way back machine on that? And by the way, you did not hear the whole story of that on the news. I know the other side. All right. I know the attorneys. I spoke to the attorneys on the other side. I spoke to family members on the other side and other people. You didn't get the full story on that. Why? Because we're all being manipulated by the freaking news. Yes. So that's what you have. So in review, you got to prepare, especially for this medical stuff, guys. It's going to bite you on the rear end here with that. Let's go to, no, I don't want to end stream. Let's go to remove from stream. Okay, there we are. Got a little personal here, maybe a little bit too personal, but this is what you need to look out for. These are the pitfalls of this. You say, well, okay, Jim, okay, well, I'll come. Again, disaster preparation. It's critical out there. We're going to go to commercial break. And we're going to come back. We have, how long do we have? How many more minutes? We'll finish up with the final 12 minutes worth of programming on that. We're probably not going to go into news and views too much, but we'll figure it out. We'll get there. We'll get there. Don't worry about it with that.
In a world where danger lurks in every corner, one man stands as a beacon of hope. Jim Posel, a veteran safety expert with over three decades of experience, now bringing his knowledge to you with Safety Wars. Engaging, informative, and always relevant. That's Safety Wars. Join the safety revolution with Safety Wars, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars with your host, Jim Posel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
Yes, we face harsh reality on this show all the time. At least you try to. We'll find out. Okay, we're going to go. Not a lot going on here today. For whatever reason, they're holding back this stuff. Right? It's kind of funny here. Not a lot of stuff. I don't know. I hope everyone's no one's sick there. But, you know, U.S. Department of Labor seeks nominations for membership on Federal Advisory Council on Occupational Safety and Health. U.S. Department of Labor is seeking nominations for one federal agency manager and four labor representatives of federal employees on the Federal Advisory Council on Occupational Safety and Health. Those selected will serve 3-year terms beginning January 1st, 2025, and ending December 31st, 2027. The 16-member council advises the Secretary of Labor on all matters relating to the occupational safety and health of federal employees. FACOSH, or FACOSH, almost sounds like Fregazi, right? Meaning fake. Members serve at the pleasure of the Secretary. Unless a member is no longer qualified to serve, resigns, or is removed. Again, check that out. Now, maybe there's some listeners. I know we have listeners in Brussels, the spy capital of the world. That I do know. A lot of listeners there, apparently. Several hundred. U.S. Department of Labor awards more than $7.4 million to continue disaster recovery after California's severe winter storms in 2023. The U.S. Department of Labor today announced the award of more than $7.4 million to support continued disaster relief employment and workforce training for California residents affected by severe winter storms that occurred in late 2022 and early 2023. Right, on April 13, 2023, the department announced National Dislocated Worker Grant of up to $22 million with an initial award of $7.4 million. For the California Employment Development Department to provide people with temporary jobs focused on debris removal, water damage, cleanup, and the delivery of humanitarian assistance to those in need after the storm. Funding also supports career and training services between December 27, 2022 and January 31, 2023. A series of winter storms and atmospheric rivers swept through California and caused damage in 51 of the state's 58 counties. The storms reducing flooding and mudslides toppled trees, creating sinkholes and damaged public and private lands. The FEMA issued a major disaster declaration on January 14, 2023, enabling California to request federal assistance for recovery efforts. Administered by the Department's Employment and Training Administration, supported by Workplace Innovation and Opportunity Act of 2014, National Dislocated Worker Grants provide funding assistance to temporarily expand the service capacity of dislocated worker programs at the state and local level when large unexpected economic events cause significant job losses. That was released today. What else do we have here? Okay. Now, one of the things you have to ask, right, when you have a new client, especially if you're a consultant, is whether or not you have regular employees, meaning a statutory employee, or do you have independent contractors. Every time I get involved, and also whether or not you have pay issues with your people. Now, you can say, well, Jimmy, what's the issue on that? Well, here I have, now I could scroll through all these Department of Labor press releases, and here we have numerous stories on Department of Labor collecting back wages for people who are denied overtime or misclassified. So what I always tell people is, especially if they're going to be bringing me on as their consultant, I ask, how are these people paid? Are they actual legal employees and everything else, or are they paying them as independent contractors? That's a very good leading indicator. Because what happens is, if they're going to say they're paying everybody as independent contractors, you got to really think about what you're doing with them. Because they're going to pull the fast one that we don't have to obey OSHA because they're independent contractors. It turns out that OSHA views this the same as the IRS, where if they're misclassified, you're going to be a little bit harder on you. And that's one of the things here with that. Now, here we have today the Department of Labor awards $203 million in grants to provide training services to low-income older adults in 14 states and the District of Columbia. The U.S. Department of Labor announced the award of $203 million in grants through the Senior Community Service Employment Program to provide training and career services to low-income older adults who are seeking to enter or re-enter the workforce. Department's Employment and Training Administration awarded $194 million to 19 national nonprofit organizations through the program's general fund, and three organizations received a total of $9 million in funds set aside by statute to provide employment services to older workers from Native American or Asian American Pacific Islander communities. The funding will enable program participants to move into unsubsidized employment in public and private sectors, foster self sufficiency, right, and is promote right people who are unemployed with low income of ages 55 and older. And it gives you a whole bunch of grant info. There's no surprise with some of this stuff, right? So we have the normal recipients, right? AARP, those are familiar. Easter Seals, Goodwill Industries, Industries International, Center for Workplace Inclusion, to name a few. And then you have also Institute for Indian Development, National Indian Council on Aging, National Asian Pacific Center on Aging, lesser known, meant for senior community service programs. So some familiar organizations, maybe some not so unfamiliar. Check it out. You may need know someone who needs a hand there. And anyway, the Epoch Times today did a story saying, don't believe any of these unemployment numbers and all these other numbers because they keep getting corrected. Wait for the final numbers to come out again. But what does the news media cover? The initial reports. That's what I got for tonight. We got about 2 minutes left. We're going to go to our outro and our normal patriotic music here. I hope to be back on the air tomorrow for Safety Wars and Safety FM. This is Jim Polzel. Good night.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.